This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
This is the Broadway Boys Podcast through the Hockey Podcast Network, and we are back with Season 3, Episode 17. As the New York Rangers now have won 7 in a row, they defeated the Blackhawks last night 6-2. They have the Colorado Avalanche tonight at 7 bells at home, which will be the biggest test of the season thus far. We'll see how they do on a back-to-back against one of the most dynamic teams in the entire league. And then we have Buffalo, Nashville, and Colorado again to kind of round off the middle of December and heading into the true holiday season. But first, I have to ask Andy, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, you know, same old, just Rangers keep spinning and winning. They've now, like you said, they've won seven of their last seven in a row. What have they won, 10 of their last 11 or 9 of their last 11? One of those two, and they've set a
franchise record. I can't remember.
Yeah, they have their best start throughout 24 games in franchise history, which I didn't know until they tweeted it out officially last night, which is pretty impressive, because especially thinking back to right after they went to the Cup, they won the President's Trophy the following year, and they were, that team just was winning games left and right. So the fact that this is the best start they've ever gotten off to is, yeah, really surprising. But a welcome surprise, obviously, because even some of the other teams that have been hot have leveled off a bit. The Canes have been a little bit up and down recently. The Flames have been a little bit up and down recently. Dallas, who looked abysmal to start the year, even though they were one of the Rangers, their second loss on the year, has been rolling. The Rangers have obviously been rolling, and obviously Colorado has been rolling. So yeah, tonight's a real test for this team, but they're going to have to lose at some point. And if it's against the Colorado Avalanche, you know, on the one hand, you'll have people in line to say, oh, well, the Rangers only won against like subpar teams and they can't win against good teams or whatever. But the same point is, like, you have to play the teams that are in front of you, and the good teams drop games to subpar opponents all the time. It's how it happened, you know. But we beat the Sharks pretty handily the other night, although they had good looks. But the Sharks just clobbered Calgary last night. So that's just how it is. You just have to play. You can say all you want about, you know, quality of teams, but yeah, you just play the teams that are in front of you. And I also remember prior to the meeting the Canes in the bubble, we absolutely clowned them in every game we played them in the regular season, only for them to then just embarrass us in the bubble. So yeah, a good test for the Rangers tonight, but they just keep their winning ways no matter what happens in the course of these games, going down goals, having, yeah, they just don't let it rattle them, and they just keep on winning. They keep on keeping on, never too high, never too low. So yeah. Like I said, status quo. They just keep winning.
Yeah, and you kind of feel that we're playing together, right, as a team. I mean, you look on the bench after a goal is scored, and the whole bench is, you know, kind of laughing and, you know, goofing on the play that might have happened. You know, last night Reeves had a couple assists, and you just saw him and all the smiles that he had, and the rest of the team kind of just, you know, laughing and having a good time. They're as loose as you could possibly be, which could eventually turn into one of their downfalls, because, you know, eventually, like you said, you're going to run into a team and it's just going to be the perfect storm. And unfortunately, I think that perfect storm might be tonight against the Avalanche. You're on the road last night with a later start. You come back, it's probably 2 a.m. You have to get up, start your day. You got the Avalanche that probably have been in town since last night. They wake up in New York City. You know, they're energized. They're hungry to win. They've been, you know, kind of rolling. McKinnon, I think, only has one goal on the season. Did I hear that last night? Of course, either Joe or Sam brought that up. And I'm like, well, thanks a lot, because now he's going to have a hat trick tonight. Yeah. You know, Georgie's in net against, you know, one of the most lethal teams in the league. And it just seems like
I don't know if you know this, James.
But no, I don't know this.
There's a rumor going around that Adam Husko will be starting in net tonight.
You know what? I love that move.
Me too.
I love it. That kid, Gallant should be telling that kid, listen, there's no pressure. This is one of the best teams in the league. You know, one of the favorite teams to win a Stanley Cup. I want you to go out there, have fun, you know, see the puck, do your thing, you know, play like you would if you were playing for the Wolfpack tonight. Like, no pressure here. Like, don't feel like because we have a winning streak that this is, there's more pressure on it. Forget the winning streak. Forget what we've been doing. Just go out there and have fun. Like, you're right now, I know this is crazy, but I'm going to say this is like a throwaway game. Whatever happens tonight, I'm not going to have any emotion. If we win, that's great. But if we lose or get crushed, it means absolutely nothing to me. I'm not going to, you know, begrudge anybody or anybody on this team. It's just, it's one of those things, you know, it's coming. The Rangers are eventually going to have to lose. You know, it's coming.
Yeah. And this is a brutal, what a brutal turnaround is. They even send the broadcast. They're not getting home until maybe two. And when I say home, they're probably not touching down in New York until 2 a.m. ish. So, you know, they're crawling into bed. I doubt they're having a pregame skate because of that. They probably just told everyone, you know, sleep in, do what you have to do to recoup as much as you can. And especially being pumped off of a win, I'm sure it was hard to sleep on the plane if they were amped up or whatever. But yeah, I mean, that, like you said, James, I think it's, if it is, honestly, I don't know if I'll mind either way, because again, Georgiev has been, despite struggling with his confidence issues, clearly each win he has looked a little bit more composed, you know, especially rebounding after two goals that were, you know, one he pretty much had no chance on, and another one that's kind of a breakdown in front of the net and a bang bang and just kind of not being able to clear sight it. But I think Hushka ultimately is the right move, because again, I think if anything, it would be easy for the Rangers to say to themselves, like, you know what, we're tired, we don't have it tonight, and they're a good team, and it could snowball on them quickly. But if you put a kid like Hushka in net, there is almost like a little bit of an onus. It's like, this is his kid's first NHL start. Are we going to let lead him to the slaughter, you know, against the Avalanche? And if you remember, just two seasons ago, Shesterkin's first game was against the Avalanche, who scored two quick ones early, but then the Rangers kind of worked their way back into the game. So, and it'll be interesting to see who's in net for the Avalanche, because as awesome as they've been with their goal scoring, they've been lighting teams up. They haven't exactly been very good defensively, you know, and you could say that's because they've been playing like their third and fourth string goalie. But I just think because they play that run and gun up tempo style, I think you can definitely, if you're smart about it, I think you can definitely, you maintain your structure. There are goals there to be had, especially by this Rangers team that's starting to actually put the puck in the net now and run up scores. And the fact that they can also stay committed, their structure seems to improve as the game goes on. It's just those first periods so far for them seem to be, you know, they'll have a push and then they'll early, and then all of a sudden they'll kind of like, they'll fall off a bit, but then work their way back into the game. That seems to be the natural pace that their games take right now. So yeah, I mean, I won't be mad if they lose, because again, if they look sluggish, I'm going to say, of course, their schedule has been brutal and they just keep winning and they were due for a loss, and, you know, especially at home where they have an awesome record. So, but if they win, I mean, I'm going to be an insufferable guy, you know, to any of my friends who are fans of other teams, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, a key for tonight, and, you know, obviously this podcast will come out after the game, but, you know, if you're listening to this right now, I really hope and I really want to see the New York Rangers kind of still have control along the boards with the puck. I mean, they've been doing that so well, and it kind of, you know, distorts their, you know, their opponent. You know, you saw it last night with the Blackhawks. It breaks down. The defensive structure breaks down so easily if you're able to win, you know, pucks along the boards. And you saw it with, you know, even Kako just being able to, you know, kind of fend off that first guy. And now that second man needs to commit, and there's a whole rotation that goes on. And the Rangers are just so skilled that they can get the puck to the open man and generate shots. And, you know, that's what they're going to have to do against the Avalanche. If, you know, generate, you know, possession time along the boards, and that will, you know, hopefully, you know, draw a couple penalties, and, you know, you can chip away on the power play, and special teams will be certainly important tonight. But, you know, just the Rangers play right now, I mean, they're playing a style you're going to win against the good teams if you're able to continue, you know, that type of pressure, especially if you can control the puck along the boards. I mean, that's when so many penalties happen, whether it's a high stick or whether it's a hold or trip or, or and then, you know, even if there is no penalty called on the play, if you can just beat that first man with a spin move and that second man has to commit, that automatically opens up someone on the other side of the ice. So, you know, the Rangers have been doing just such a good job in the offensive zone. And, you know, Andy, I wanted to bring this up. I honestly don't remember the Rangers being this good in the offensive zone in like a decade. I know, I mean, obviously they're off to the best start we've ever seen in franchise history, but you know, this does not look like any of the New York Rangers teams, even when, you know, they were competing for a Stanley Cup with, you know, we've just never seen this type of offense.
Yeah. I mean, the story in the Rangers for the last few years, and still their goals for, although recently has been increasing, their average goals for regular season play is down, but obviously their goals against is also down because of that. And this, the Rangers have been a very feast or famine off the rush team for the last few years, which is, again, great in the regular season, but we know what happens in the postseason when things clog up. You need to be able to be set up in the offensive zone and grind teams down and find and generate and create your own time and space. And even though this is a play that technically happens off the rush, you've seen the Rangers just murdering teams on the cycle once they're already set up. It's not, they're not rush plays. And even when they are, it's not just a quick bang, bang off of the rush. You see that first goal, Panarin comes in, he curls quickly to the middle of the ice, raises his leg, kind of like TJ Oshie did two seasons ago, kind of kicks Panarin lifts his knee to ward off Patrick Kane's stick check, curls in, and then Trouba, who is trailing in as the last man in the zone, walks to space and then takes the shot. You know, Panarin thus creating a wake for him. And they've done that. They've used their bodies to set pick plays in traffic into open lanes and to generate chaos in the offensive zone. And it's working. And even once after they scored the empty net goal, or Panarin scores his empty net goal for his fourth point of the night, you see that fourth line still gets to work and wins board battles and are just, and that's what happens after the Rangers score a goal or concede a goal. They put Turk puts the fourth line out and they've just been going to work, and they are finally getting rewarded with some goals after it was a little feast, or, you know, there was a little famine for them earlier in the season, but now they're feasting, you know? So yeah, I've never seen them look this competent set up. Obviously their power play is just clicking right now. They're passing the puck like a lot like they usually do, but they're also keeping teams, and I think you saw the tale of two goals last night on the power play. You have you know, just the chaos and the passing, and then a breakdown in front of the net, and Zibanejad makes that extra little chip pass to open space for Panarin just to walk in and just put it in an empty net, where literally you see Fleury and a Chicago defender just have to lay out to try to make the save and just can't do it. And then, yeah, Fox just their pass around, Kreider sets up in front of the net and just soft lob on net, and he's looking for him and he gets him, and beautiful tip right under the I think it was the blocker of Fleury. And yeah, they're confident and they're just not overthinking it. They're just playing now. And I think that's why their metrics have looked so much better, and they're working their way in after looking pretty bad to start. They're clearly just getting better and they're getting more comfortable, and the kid line continues to generate offense. And even if they're not scoring, they're drawing penalties, and they're almost like an energy jump line. You know what I mean? It's almost like getting grinded down by the third and the fourth line. If those two lines are doing that and keeping you even, and hell, even the fourth line potting some goals, especially once you got a guy like Adam Fox in the mix, and we'll talk about Reeves two assists in a second, but yeah, I mean, that's a winning success, because even the Mika Kako, now that Kako's on that line, his defensive stick and his puck thievery in the neutral zone and in the offensive zone is keeping the puck in longer and helping impede breakouts, and that time is getting more zone time, because they were kind of a one and done shot off the rush line for a bit, even when they had Hunt there. But I think they've found so much of a better balance, and the team is rolling right now. That's all I can really say.
Yeah, and you really feel like they can just throw out any three players and they would be fine, because they all kind of buy into the system. They all are aggressive along the boards. I mean, you even see Panarin. I mean, could anyone buy into a style play more than Artemi Panarin? And it's obviously paying dividends. I mean, he was going for like a, they were making jokes, you know, the Gordie Howe hat trick, you know, a goal, assist, and a fight. And you know, it's pretty funny to watch Panarin play that physical game and not be afraid to throw a big hit. And it's funny because, you know, I just feel like I don't obviously don't know this for sure, but I feel like if, you know, Panarin's throwing these hits and he kind of threw, you know, a boarding one, I forget who that was against, but it was kind of a scummy hit. But, you know, does he throw that hit if Reeves isn't sitting on the bench? I mean, no one's going to go after Panarin, because if you go after Panarin, Reeves will go right after you. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, they have all the confidence in the world and they know they can kind of chip back and kind of be scummy back in a, you know, in a way of which, you know, they can just take over the game and beat you physically and mentally and, you know, throwing hits around knowing that they have the best fighter in the league sitting on the bench.
Yeah. And listen, you want to talk a tale of two teams. Obviously, the Trouba hit on Kara last night was real scary and really unfortunate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, you can say what you want about what was it, a legal hit? Was it illegal? What was the initial point of contact? I mean, and you can also call me a homer. I mean, I just see Kara keeps his head down for a really long time. He's taller than Trouba. Trouba doesn't really leave the ice. It looks to me more like he gets him in the shoulder, but then obviously his head is tucked and he's leaning forward. So it looks like either a combination of his, as he's going through the hit, his helmet, and then what's after he kind of gets knocked, then the follow through it, he might get him a little bit with the shoulder. I don't know. But again, Jones gives Kara an absolute suicide pass, and Kara literally spends 3 seconds prior to the hit looking at his feet and benched over, hunched over, which you can't do. I mean, and again, I'm more than willing to have conversation with people about whether or not they should outlaw open ice hits like that, or do it, or whether or not they should be in the game. Under what the NHL rules are currently, and there's a reason it wasn't called a penalty on the ice. And it's I don't know if Trouba is going to get any supplemental discipline. I don't think so. I haven't heard anything. I think, and you know, they even explained it. But that happens, and there's like a mini scrum after. Obviously, it's more important that you attend to Kara, who's still down and he's not getting up. That's not the time for a fight when they need to get people out on the ice to attend to a player who's just down. You know what I mean? But then in the rest of the game after that, no one goes after Trouba. No one goes after any of the Rangers players for them. But then what happens in the corner? At one point, someone boards Dryden Hunt, right?
Yeah.
One of the Chicago players. And Strom, from 30 feet away, throws his helmet on the ground and literally goes after the guy like a honey badger. And that's where that's the biggest difference between these two teams right now, or where they're at, because the Rangers are playing like they're hunting. They're aggressive. They have a pack mentality. They're teammates. They stick up for each other. And Strom, who, you know, is kind of a sneaky underrated. You remember he dropped the gloves of Williams in the bubble and held his own. You could say he even won that fight. He won his fight on Tom Wilson revenge night. He was the only Ranger who won his fight. And then he goes after, he just goes after him like a rabid dog. And then you talk about Panarin throwing that hit. You know what? You saw how pained Trouba looked, and he didn't want this to be the outcome, and he looked like he was really upset about it and upset with himself and pained and tortured about it. And I think you could feel that the Rangers were like, no, not that they were tentative to be physical, but, or no, actually, you know what? They were tentative to be physical after that for a little bit. It was a little bit more stick checking and just controlled rub outs. The bite had kind of drifted out of their game. But then Panarin throws that hit, and I have no way of proving this, but is that Panarin sending a message like, no, we don't stop what we're doing. We're getting after them. You know, like, fuck these guys. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I can never prove it, but it kind of feels that way. That was a reminder of like, we're not getting away from our game just because this happened, which is obviously really sad and unfortunate, but you know, I don't know. And the Rangers slowly worked that physicality back into their game towards the tail end after, obviously, and rightfully so, it, like, considering what happened, it kind of got sucked out, and there was a little bit more tentativeness in terms of, it was just a little bit more strictly stick on puck and making passes and stuff, you know?
Yeah, and I couldn't even tell you how many times I've been popped in the middle of the ice, whether I had, you know, the puck in my head up and you just run into a wall. You're just like, I got angled here, and you just know you're going to get clobbered. And then there are times where I've had my head down, just been popped, knocked out, you know, woke up, you know, blinking, seeing the stars going around my head. Listen, it's something that it's a part of hockey right now because it's a legal hit. And I don't think people so much really, you know, it's one of those things where it's reactionary, right? You see your player down, you want to go after the guy that hit him. But I think at the end of the day, you know, looking at the replay a few times, and usually if it was, you know, you know, kind of a scummy hit, you'd already hear about, you know, a discipline or a hearing, or just, you know, he's got a meeting, you know, with player safety. I haven't seen anything like that, and nor do I think, you know, he will face anything or a fine or a suspension or anything. You know, it's just one of those things where 9 out of 10 times, I think if he throws that hit, you know, what's his name who got popped would be perfectly fine. And, you know, unfortunately, it just was that one time where that one instance where, you know, he did get clobbered and, you know, he did get, you know, probably his bell rung, knocked a little bit unconscious there. But, you know, luckily he's okay. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it sucks to see and it's a bad optic. But for as many times as open ice hits happen in the NHL, you know, if they want to change that rule, I think it was Joe bringing up the fact that the NHL, the open ice hits have like dropped dramatically over the last like 5 seasons, only because I think guys are just too good and too fast, and it's really hard to step up on people. But yeah, I don't know. For me, it's just you're standing still with the puck, you know, with your head down. It's like this is not the level to be doing that. I mean, that's stuff that you're taught in peewees not to do. So, you know, hopefully, you know, he gets back on the ice as soon as possible, and he can get, you know, contribute again once again with the Blackhawks. But yeah, it was certainly a different dynamic though after that hit for about a few minutes. I thought, you know, that was the worst thing that could happen to the Rangers, you know, because Blackhawks were going to come out, you know, swinging. But, you know, Rangers, you know, weathered any storm that the Blackhawks might have thrown at them.
And then I would say to jump on that, once Panarin scores that, they score, once the Rangers scored the go-ahead goal after that, I think the Hawks kind of, much like the Rangers the past few seasons, just kind of rolled over and died. I mean, to give up that line, that goal to the fourth line, and just kind of standing around staring at their feet after they were just kind of like playing it. The Hawks were basically playing like the clock was running out, and that they were thinking like the Rangers were going to like not keep getting after them and like running them down in the corners. And then the fourth line scores another hardworking, intense, gritty goal right in front of the net. Like that's stuff the Rangers were doing a couple seasons ago, you know?
Right.
And it's funny, at the time it's just like, oh, you know, Andy back then would be like, oh yeah, they were losing. And now I'm liking this winning feeling. And honestly, I was more disgusted with the Blackhawks than I was impressed with the Rangers scoring yet another goal off of hard work and a great pass from Reeves.
Well, am I wrong, Andy? I don't want to interrupt you here, but
no, go ahead,
it's a
please.
Point to kind of go off what you just said. If I'm a Blackhawks fan, I am watching that game and saying I am one unlucky bounce away from actually taking the lead against. You know how many chances I feel like Kane had? I mean, the one shot that he had, I think it was on the power play, and Fox's stick just came out of nowhere and tipped the puck up.
Oh my God! What an amazing play that was. Yeah.
Yeah, and Pat who listens to the show very often. He texted me immediately. Yeah. And he goes, you know, I'm more confident in Fox making that save than I was Georgie. And I like Georgie obviously didn't have the correct angle or didn't have, you know, the right read on the play, knowing that the pass was going to come over to Kane and he's going to, you know, one time it. But that was a goal that there are so many chances I feel like the Blackhawks could have had and scored upon that take over that game. And they just didn't. You know, I don't know if that's a credit to the Rangers per se or more of just like, you know, just puck luck. So yeah, it was just bizarre how they rolled over and laid down, even though I thought they were getting some okay scoring chances, especially on their power plays that they had.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, the Hawks, I think the one thing they have done well since the coaching change to DJ King is, although maybe not so much against the Rangers, but yeah, you could see they're definitely seeing about, well, this team clearly doesn't have all the makings of a cup caliber team, but they obviously have some faster skilled players. So they definitely are stretching the ice. They're almost playing what the style that Alain Vigneault wants to play, although just not as bereft of leaving. You know, some of their D can actually get the puck up to their forwards, which is all right. But again, it's just a real strange spot. Jonathan Toews coming back from missing time, and you know, it was still never said what it was, or at least confirmed. You know, you suspect he had COVID, and then there was ramifications to that, but also he'd mentioned his mental health and other things, and he's just clearly not the same player now. And I don't think he's going to work his way back. He looks like he's aged like, you know, 5 years. Whatever it was he went through really took a toll on him. And it's sad. It's a shame because he doesn't have a single goal, and he didn't look like Jonathan Toews to me at all during that game. And you have Kane obviously and DeBrincat who can be dangerous, but that's really it. And then maybe a guy like Hagel who works really hard, but yeah, just a bunch of passengers on that team. And just a bunch of guys looking around and looking at Toews and Kane to help them out of it. And it's not going to happen. So you have to wonder if, especially now that Jonathan Toews probably has no value. I mean, are they going to trade him? You kind of have to, right? Am I crazy to say this?
I brought it up on the podcast before.
Yeah, they have no, I can't think of a notable prospect they have. Doc is clearly struggling right now. He takes a real bad and lazy penalty after a dumb giveaway to Kako, and then slashes him stretches and slashes him on the wrist instead of just trying to really skate up on him. And he's clearly frustrated. And that's a tough environment for a rookie to be in, or even one who's been at least in the league for, you know, he missed some time with an injury last year, right? And then, yeah, just it's hard for it to expect him to pull a lot of weight. You know, you could say what you want about Kako, and he's clearly struggled, but at least there's a supporting cast here to help him get up to speed. And now that he is up to speed, I would say he's doing some of the most important and heavy lifting on his line. But he's ready for it, you know, and he knows that if he doesn't, he has competent players with him to help him out. Whereas, yeah, I think Chicago's definitely seems like a bit of a rudderless ship right now. And they have to start rebuilding. There's no ways about it. They don't have any. There's no more help coming for them. You know, like I said, I can't really think of too many of their notable prospects off the top of my head. Not that I'm that familiar with their system, but I think is Jack Rathbone one of their prospects? Who's a defenseman. He might. I don't know. I'm gonna have to look this up. Make sure I don't sound stupid. But my point still stands. I just don't. I don't see what help they have coming that in any way they can. Oh, he plays for the Canes. Maybe it's his brother. I don't know why that popped in my head. But again, yeah, they don't have any help coming. I think you kind of have to trade him, right? You need to get you can get some real good value for him, even at his age, because what if they hold on to him? Unless he's going to be a career Hawk, and that's what he wants to do. I mean, you can't get anything for Toews. The Rangers, say what you will, but they flipped Nash, McDonough, and you know there are other regulars into players for this team, and they didn't hit on all of them, but they moved all those guys. Like, you know, obviously they some of them didn't work out, but they were able to get Keandre, and they were able to get Nils, and they were able to get Lindgren, and you know, and yeah, their picks were able to compile picks that kind of led to them drafting these guys. And yes, obviously Lias didn't work out, and it's unknown if Kraftsoff will come back or be traded for another player. But obviously they were able to then flip Lias for the pick that got them Will Cooley, who's looking pretty good. So I mean, I don't know who has value that they are going to move. You don't want to move DeBrincat. Toews has no value. Maybe you sell high on Hagel, and maybe you can get a second round pick or something, and you get a first for Kane to a contender at the deadline. But if you wait till next year, and he's a guy, he doesn't exactly kind of a floaty player, as Patrick Kane, as brilliant offensively as he is. So, I mean, you have to move him. I just don't see how you can't, unless you're saying he's going to retire. He's got no movement. So unless he wants to retire a Hawk and suffer for the next couple of years, I always had the sense he wanted to go to Buffalo. Whereas I feel like if you add Kane in the offseason to Buffalo and their younger guys get a little bit older and you'll have Alex Tuck, I think like you'll at least have the makings of a team that has the potential to go somewhere. Cause right now I just don't see it in Chicago. Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game. But with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action, as everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving new customers free shots at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code THPN, bet $1 on any team to score, and you win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code THPN, as in the Hockey Podcast Network. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Yeah, I'm looking at their cap friendly right now. I mean, honestly, if I'm them, if you can move Kane, right? I really think there's a lot of value.
Him. I think teams would take Patrick Kane. You know,
absolutely. Even if you like, say you said, you know what, there's 2 years, we'll keep two million, like on, you know, we'll pay two of the 10.5 million. I really think like now you open up to the entire league wanting him. You know, man, I don't know, man. I really kind of admire the fact that, you know, obviously they signed Seth Jones to a huge contract, but, you know, looking at their forwards, they only have one forward signed, Brandon Hagel signed into 2023-24 season. So, you know, right now, Kane, unrestricted free agent, Taze, unrestricted free agent. This is 2023-24. The Brinkett becomes a restricted free agent. Kubalik and Strome are off the books already. The Brandon Hagel is signed for $1.5 million, which means absolutely nothing. Borkstrom and then Kyra, if that's even how you pronounce, I'm bad at pronunciation. I failed English. You know, Kirby Dach, obviously, he becomes an RFA next year. Reese Johnson becomes an RFA next year. And Josh Slavin will be a restricted free agent that year. So they literally have like, I mean, they can rebuild their entire offense by 23-24 season. I mean, they can bring in anybody. They could, they'll have so much money coming off the books over the next, after this year and next year. Once 23-24 hits, man, Chicago, I mean, they can go on a spending spree if they wanted to. I mean, there's nothing they can't do. And they do have a lot of draft picks, not in 2022, but in 2023-24. It looks like they, you know, stockpiled a little bit, and they have a ton of third round picks this year. So, yeah, they're probably best off trying to find a spot for Patrick Kane. I don't know if he's going to want to finish this season, but if I'm Patrick Kane, man, why wouldn't you just want to, you know, spend the next 2 years, even if it's on a team like Buffalo? I feel like you're almost in the same spot, right? You're not competing for a Stanley Cup. You're hoping the team kind of can rebuild quickly and you can be a huge piece of that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, it's not smart and they shouldn't do it. But I mean, if the Hawks retained 50% to bring on Kane, I mean, Ken, I don't know how much
I said it,
retention Andy, slot they have. I mean, can you imagine a Strome, Kane, Panarin line? You know, you would move, Hunt would then just move either down to the fourth line or the third line. Yeah, man, I don't know. I mean, that's
all right. You can't do this to me and then not really explore the option right now. What would you give up for Kane? realistically.
Well, that's the thing is that, I mean, obviously it's easy for me to say Kravtsov because I feel like he doesn't want to come back. You'd have to give up a first to get him. You'd have to give out your first round pick. You'd have to give up Vitali Kravtsov. I think the fact that Kane doesn't have any term beyond next season is actually works in his in Chicago's favor, because then teams know that if it's not working out, they're not on the hook for very long. So you might have to give up two quality prospects and a first to get Patrick Kane, even at his age, because of, you know, he's still productive and he's, you know. So I don't, again, it's kind of, does it make the Rangers a top flight contender? I'm not sure, because again, that line, Panarin line is so productive and there's only so much ice time to go around, where it's almost like, because he can draw, you know, just because he can, you know, honestly, I can't believe I would even suggest this, but if you got him, I'd almost rather play him with Zibanejad and Kreider. I know that sounds crazy, but Panarin
can want to play with Panarin.
I know he's going to want to play with Panarin, and that's my problem with it, because it's great, but Panarin's line is already crushing teams, and it just, you know, you bring Kane in, I want him to bolster other parts of this lineup. It's just that line doesn't get scored on. They're the Rangers' best, him and Strome together. They're their best line in terms of expected goals for and like limiting goals, like chances against. So I just don't, it's just over. I think it just becomes overkill. Well, you know what I mean? I just don't think you're overpaying for overkill. I think the only value Kane would really bring to this team is if you put him to get Mika going all of a sudden, because Mika can shoot the puck, but he's been passing to Kreider. So I think that's the only chance you get it, the value you want, is that you just have a dominant first line finally. And that's not to say Kako's not doing an excellent job, but then, yeah, then maybe you move Kako down with, I think that's the problem though, is that it's like, you know, and I will say this too, it's not lost on me that I think a lot of the reasons this Rangers team is successful is because Turk likes to play a little bit more simpler style, and a lot of it is about balance. And I think having your Gauthiers and your Hunts and your Blaze and your Roonies and your guys who are just, I'm forecheck like every shift like an MFer and create chaos, a part of me thinks that's kind of what the secret's in the sauce. And I think if you're too, you know, Kane is a superb, is an awesome player, but it was, you know, he got Panarin to buy in. I have never seen Kane throw a hit in like on the boards ever. And that's obviously great. Like, he was obviously so good for Chicago and their runs, but the rest of the team was like that. But again, I just think, I don't know. I think
put you on a spot, Andy. Yeah. So be ready.
All right. Well, I'm just, to sum up what I'm saying is that, I do think Kane obviously would make this team even more lethal, but I just think that what you would end up paying ultimately is just doesn't, I just don't think you get the rate, your rate of return is very good, because you give up a lot, especially if it, let's say the Rangers, which most likely I don't think they will, don't win the cup this year. I think having a chance to be a stronger team down the line once your Zibanejad and your Kreider, you know, if Kreider gets moved eventually for cap reasons, or yeah, you're going to want to have something, some ammunition to at least, you know, bolster your roster, and to blow it all this season in a like found, what almost seems like a found money season on a Patrick Kane on an expiring contract. I don't know if that's a good idea.
Well, Andy, here I am. I'm going to, you know, it is the holiday season, and I'm going to give you another scenario that we've spoken about, but I think this one makes a little bit more sense, because with Patrick Kane, it's kind of an overload on the right-hand side of the puck for like there's, you also don't want, you know, your right wingers, you know, like especially like Kako, you still want him to have a fair amount of playing time. And I just feel like bringing in Kane, that might be too much. You don't know where to stick him. You're going to have to stick him with Panarin, because there's just too many issues with Patrick Kane. And he also makes $10.5 million. So, you know, it would have to be like a perfect scenario in which, you know, Chicago retains a bunch of his salary. There's another player out there, Andy, that plays the center position and I think would fit right in with this team. And, you know, a leader, obviously, a big time name is Claude Giroux, who.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
His last year of his contract, or is right now, he makes $8.275 million. He's a UFA after this season. the Flyers are not going to do anything this year. You know, I would honestly be impressed if they were able to rally the troops and somehow sneak into that last wild card spot. But they're just, you know, on a downtrend. It's so tough for them right now. They're not going to be able to score goals. I don't know. They have such a mess. Alain Vigneault has absolutely destroyed this team. If you really want to speed up some sort of, you know, I wouldn't call it a total rebuild, but kind of like a revamp, you're going to need some sort of, you need draft picks. You might need a prospect or two to kind of feel good if you're a Flyers fan. The Rangers can do that. You give us Claude Giroux. You retain, you know, even if it's 50% this year, it doesn't really matter. We have some prospects for you. We can give you a second round pick or a first round pick if that's what you really want. If you value the pick over the prospect or the prospect over the pick, we can go at any direction. And I think it really solves a huge problem for the New York Rangers. Even if they took Hedl in that trade, what an upgrade it is for the New York Rangers to bring in Claude Giroux to play center. I mean, where do you stick him right now? Obviously, Mika Zibanejad is you have Mika, Claude Giroux, and Strome as your 1-2-3. Talk about, you know, depth right there.
Yeah, and I mean, Giroux is also, if you remember, he's played, he's a center, but he's also played on the wing with Couturier in the middle.
Yep.
You know, so he can play on the wing with the line. And hell, again, I saw, I don't know if it was even kicked out, but we see Kreider take faceoffs now and then because he's actually kind of good at them. We see Lafreniere's taken a few faceoffs recently. And again, you could have Giroux take the faceoffs if he's better than Mika at the dot, but then just kind of switch for up the ice duties. And again, this Flyers team is clearly shell-shocked and hapless, but Giroux has been the one guy who stood out to me in a good hit. Well, him and I'd say Morgan Frost are the two only two have really stood out to me this season for them in a positive light. And again, yeah, I think getting that Mika going is probably will be the biggest that, and then obviously shoring up that third pairing, because again, Nemeth has been better in a lot of respects and he's good on the penalty kill, but like his puck management is really bad, and I could see him making some crucial mistakes that could lead to goals against. And I have to say, I think Nils is getting better and better, even though it's still overwhelming for him at times, but he's definitely more engaged and more confident skating the puck out. Whereas early on, he was just kind of trying to survive. You know what I mean?
Well,
so getting Nils a partner who's a little bit more confident should clearly be up on the list. But I think Giroux would do a lot, especially with the fire he's shown this season when everyone else on the Flyers have looked defeated. You know, I think would go a long way. But I don't know if he's available, but we'll see.
What about Keith bringing Yandle and Giroux?
No, thank you. Yandle's cooked, unfortunately. The only reason he's playing is that Iron Man streak. And it's sad to see, but it happens. Yandle's old, too. He's 30.
Oh, first of all, I want to bring that up. The Iron Man streak, that I'm sorry, but if you miss a game in the playoffs, that should count.
Like, yeah, I would say that. I would say.
But he missed the game, too. Who scratched him in the playoffs? Florida scratched him in the playoffs last year.
Like, well, didn't they unscratch him because the team was all up?
No, he was scratched, but playoff games. So I read it. The playoff games don't count towards the Iron Man streak, which is absolutely absurd.
Yeah, listen, I get it because for the NHLers, games played is such a hugely respected stat because it's so hard to stick in the NHL and not wash out. But I think you can see that Yandle is almost cooked right now. I mean, you can see Jonathan Toews is almost cooked. You see Yandle's almost cooked. And I should say this. Toews still has 9 points. Whether how they happened, I'm not really quite sure. But it's and one guy's so cooked mean. Might be another guy's. I know that. But yeah, I just from seeing Yandle, he doesn't play defense. His main strength has been his puck moving abilities, and he's just not doing that well. So I just can't, you know. But yeah, I mean, the Rangers clearly have options and they have a lot to think about. And I assume we've spoken about this, that Drury will be consulting and talking heavily with Turk about what he thinks their issues are and, you know, what do you need? A la Mike Keenan bothering the GM constantly saying, I need more of this or I need more of that. But yeah, I think they know that probably that third pairing right now is an issue for them. I guess we'll see. And the Rangers, much has been made of the cap crunch that will eventually be coming for the Rangers, even though they have some dead cap right now. Or I should say they have some available cap space right now. So, yeah, I mean, if there's a shrewd move to be had for a guy who's maybe not as puts you over the top as much, but has more potential down the line, I'd be all for that, too. But again, they have a lot of kids coming on the back end who should be good. But, you know, they have a very strange window right now because, you know, that you can't keep all of Trouba, Kreider, Strome, you know, if you want to resign your younger guys eventually. But, you know, I think at this point you're seeing the writing's kind of on the wall for Philip Hedl, that as good as he is, he's just not a productive player, or he's not getting enough time to be productive. You know, I think Philip Hedl is a kid who could do well on a team like the Senators that could probably afford to play him, or in a position to play him second line minutes, for whether he's ready for it, or, you know, or whether he's a true second line center right now or not. Because as effective as he is off, you know, off the rush and as a one-on-one player, he doesn't have the vision to produce at least as a level commiserate, unless he's got like a supremely talented goal-scoring winger on his line. So, yeah, something to think about, you know, especially now that there's talks that the Rangers might re-sign Strom. So who knows?
Yeah. How about Justin Braun and Giroux, and then you kind of give a package away of like a pick. A prospect.
I'll, in being honest, I'm not sure how good, I haven't really kept tracks on Braun right now. I don't know how good he is this year, or if he's, I know he's a little bit older, longer in the tooth, right? And I say that because he's my age, but I would like to say that could be good. I definitely think Giroux would be a great ad. You know, it's just funny. Part of me is like, thinks, would a guy like Gallagher cost less? He's a little bit younger. And, you know, I don't know. It's just, that's a tough. And I think he definitely fits this team's DNA to a T. Not that Giroux doesn't, because Giroux, you know, he's been playing really well. I think he's versatile and he doesn't really shy away. He's definitely more physical than Kane is, I'll say that. But, I don't know. It's definitely tough to think about and tough to see right now, because especially it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So and you have to wonder how they feel in the locker room. So like, obviously there's teams that like having the vote of confidence, but then I think sometimes there's a team that feel that they have the answer there and you want to know what you can get. And there have been teams that have made at least pretty significant runs while not tweaking too much or making just a very minor depth thing in case the guy goes down. So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe is it a goaltender move? I don't know. But we'll see. Maybe it is a goaltender move if they're not ultimately, if they think Igor sustains another injury down the, you know, the season or goes down for whatever reason. But yeah, they're definitely showing they have at least some faith in Georgiev to get himself back on track. So, and he's on his way. So that's good.
Yeah, no, he played well enough to get the win, and you couldn't expect anything more from him last night. Tough one tonight, Andy, but, you know, you got to feel real good, and I'll kind of, you know, let you finish this podcast up knowing that you have a top five forward in the top five forward in scoring in the NHL and the number one scoring defenseman in the NHL, both on your team, both in their prime. Kind of leading us on a historic season so far. So you can wrap it up with thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun. Obviously, Cale Makar and Adam Fox in the same game should be a lot of fun, because there's a lot of hand-wringing and arguments about who is the better defenseman. And obviously, it's like they have fervid support in both of their camps. And you know, they're two totally different styles of defensemen. Fox being a little bit more cerebral and a little bit more of a three-zone guy, whereas Makar is also very, obviously, he's good in his own zone, but his real strength is the fact that he's got game-breaking physical talents that can transport the puck off the rush up the ice and then just wheel around the zone. He's got a killer shot. So, yeah, and he's just physically, he's just a monster in terms of his skating ability. But, yeah, they're just two guys that get it done different ways. So that'll obviously be a fun matchup. Panarin has worked himself into some of the best hockey I've seen him play ever, and he's adding a physical element to boot. Like, that line is not just getting pushed around the perimeter. They're not on the perimeter because they have to. It's just they win their battles, and they bear down harder than I've seen them before. And they're winning. They're playing winning hockey. So, and even after, you could say, a quote unquote slow start, and what's wrong with Panarin early in the season, he's already worked his way up to, like you said, he's like fifth in the league in scoring. And he's gaining ground, and he had 7 points in his last two games against the Blackhawks. So it'd be great if we could play the Blackhawks and the Islanders all the time. He'd be Draisaitl, McDavid. But yeah, I mean, as long as you have players like that, you have a chance. But when you have players like that and you have a team that is playing like a team and playing to their structure, and they still have things they need to clean up. They still make some harebrained turnovers here and there, and they have young guys who are guilty of that, and they have even some vets, you know, like Nemeth, that are guilty of that. But for the most part, they're usually pretty good. And if they make one or two bad mistakes that hurts them early on, they usually are good the rest of the game and they correct it. So I think that's going to be the secret to their success all season. It's been so far is that they might not be the best team, and they might not even win all their games by looking the best or being perfect for the whole game or flat out dominating, but Turk's game management is superb, and thus the team in front of him, you know, or in front of him on the ice, their game management is superb, and they always play to the opponent in front of them, and they do what they have to do, and they manage the game the best. If they need a goal, they go out and try to get it. If they have a lead, they do their best to not just shell out and play turtle hockey. And again, it doesn't always mean, sometimes it means giving a little bit back on the rush at times, and maybe not stretching things out as much as they could when they need a goal. But again, they have confidence in their power play, and they have confidence in themselves that they'll tie it up, and they have. So yeah, again, so much to be proud of this team so far. And again, it's at this point, it's like they will lose eventually, obviously. But what if they didn't?
Thank you for listening to the Broadway Boys Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Boys Pod, and please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, or thehockeypodcastnetwork.com.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.